Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Afghanistan's Ghani thanks U.S. troops for sacrifice. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has visited the Pentagon to thank U.S. troops for their sacrifice in his country. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports Mr. Ghani will later hold diplomatic talks at the presidential retreat known as Camp David.
Speaking in the center courtyard of the five-sided U.S. military headquarters, President Ashraf Ghani paid tribute to the more than 2,000 U.S. service members who have died in Afghanistan since 2001 and the more than 850,000 who served there during the past 14 years. He also said the threat of terrorism would never defeat Afghans.
And in this endeavor, our partnership with the United States is foundational because we will be the first line of defense for freedom globally.
After once again thanking the crowd of service members and their families for their sacrifice, the Afghan president left the Pentagon for Camp David for talks on security and economic development. Carla Babb, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Soldiers loyal to Yemeni President Abrabu Mansour Hadi fought off dozens of Shiite Houthi rebels who had been sent toward the southern city of Aden, militia and security sources said Monday. Security officials said the rebels had sent several thousand troops south and fought around dawn Monday with local Sunni tribes as they approached Aden, where Hadi had taken refuge after fleeing the capital Sana'a last month. Also Monday, Yemen's new foreign minister, Riyad Yassin, called on the Gulf Cooperation Council to send troops to Yemen to curb the expansion of the Houthi militia. This is VOA News. Lee Kuan Yew, the founder of modern Singapore and architect of its rise to global economic prominence, has died. He was 91. Mr. Lee was hospitalized in Singapore General Hospital in early February with severe pneumonia and was later placed on life support. The office of Singapore's prime minister said Mr. Lee, who ruled the island nation from 1959 to 1990, passed away peacefully early today. Mourners took to the streets the minute the news broke. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe praised Lee's leadership to offering his condolences, and Australia's Foreign Minister Julie Bishop had this to say.
Lee Kuan Yew was a towering figure in Singaporean political and social life. He was a giant in the region and an incredible statesman. He'll be sorely missed. He made a profound impact on the development of Singapore from a very poor developing country to the bustling, dynamic economy that it is today.
The government has declared a state of mourning for Singapore until Mr. Lee's funeral next Sunday. Texas Senator Ted Cruz announced Monday he is running for U.S. president in the country's 2016 election. Cruz had hinted he would formally launch his bid for the Republican Party nomination and made it official in a message and video on his Twitter account just after midnight Monday. The 44-year-old first-term senator is the first high-profile Republican candidate to formally join the race. Cruz, who joined the Senate in 2013, is a favorite of the conservative Tea Party. U.S. President Barack Obama is calling for free and fair elections in Nigeria this Saturday and for Nigerians to reject the violence that has marred the country's previous polls. In a video released Monday by the U.S. Embassy in Abuja, President Obama said successful elections are key to stopping insurgent group Boko Haram and allowing more than a million displaced Nigerians to return to their homes. France's conservative UMP party, led by former President Nicolas Sarkozy, placed first in Sunday's local elections, bearing the far-right National Front, beating them by a small majority. The UMP took 29% of the vote in Sunday's first-round election, while the FN received 25%. And the leader of debt-ridden Greece meets Monday with the leader of economic powerhouse Germany. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras warned German Chancellor Angela Merkel ahead of their meeting that his country will not be able to pay its debt without help from the European Union. Chancellor Merkel wants her Greek counterpart to make and enforce tough spending cuts and reforms in order to receive more bailout money. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiye Suhib, and coming up this hour on African News Tonight,
the spokesman of the All Progressives Congress, or EC, Alhaji Lai Mohammed, held a news conference in Ikeja at White House Hotel this morning, and he said the APC had uncovered a plot by the ruling People's Democratic Party, or PDP, to use state security agents, including the military and the police, to intimidate their supporters and to rig the vote.
That's our colleague Peter Cloti reporting from Nigeria. Details coming up.
Also, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan have signed a treaty on access to the Nile River, and hopes of soon declaring Liberia Ebola-free ended on Friday when someone tested positive for the virus, the first infection in 3 weeks.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Mali, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, President Obama today sent a message to the Nigerian people ahead of Saturday's presidential election. Mr. Obama praised Nigeria's transition from military rule to democracy and its strong economy.
Now you have a historic opportunity to help write the next chapter of Nigeria's progress by voting in the upcoming elections. For elections to be credible, they must be free, fair, and peaceful. All Nigerians must be able to cast their votes without intimidation or fear. So I call on all leaders and candidates to make it clear to their supporters that violence has no place in democratic elections, and that they will not incite, support, or engage in any kind of violence before, during, or after the votes are counted. I call on all Nigerians to peacefully express your views and to reject the voices of those who call for violence. And when elections are free and fair, it is the responsibility of all citizens to help keep the peace, no matter who wins.
Mr. Obama also spoke of the conflict in northeastern Nigeria, where a military offensive is underway by Nigeria and its neighbors against Boko Haram militants.
Boko Haram, a brutal terrorist group that kills innocent men, women, and children, must be stopped. Hundreds of kidnapped children deserve to be returned to their families. Nigerians who have been forced to flee deserve to return to their homes. Boko Haram wants to destroy Nigeria and all that you have built. By casting your ballot, you can help secure your nation's progress. I'm told that there's a saying in your country: to keep Nigeria one is a task that must be done. Today, I urge all Nigerians, from all religions, all ethnic groups, and all regions, to come together and keep Nigeria one. And in this task of advancing the security, prosperity, and human rights of all Nigerians, you will continue to have a friend and partner in the United States of America.
President Barack Obama addressing the Nigerian people.
Well, Saturday's presidential election in Nigeria will be the country's fifth since returning to democracy in 1999. Since then, the ruling People's Democratic Party, PDP, has remained undefeated. However, observers say President Goodluck Jonathan is facing tough competition from ex-military ruler Muhammadu Buhari and his All Progressives Congress Party, APC. Voice of America's Peter Cloti is in Ikeja in Lagos, Nigeria, where the opposition APC held a press conference today calling for a transparent election. Peter gives us the latest developments.
Well, the spokesman of the All Progressives Congress, or APC, Alhaji Lai Mohammed, held a news conference in Ikeja at White House Hotel this morning, and he said that the APC will not accept anything other than a credible election on March 28. He said the APC had uncovered a plot by the ruling People's Democratic Party, or PDP, to use state security agents, including the military and the police, to intimidate their supporters and to rig the vote. He also said that the postponement was a way for the PDP to perfect its rigging machinery. So in that doing, he urged supporters of all sympathizers of the APC to use their cell phones to protect their votes by recording all incidents during the election. By so doing, they will protect the vote and prevent any attempt to rig the election.
Also, Peter, what is INEC saying about protecting the vote using permanent voter cards?
Well, Kim, there have been issues of some politicians buying votes, or what they do is buying the permanent voter cards of PC of voters. What they do is they buy the cards and clone them by reproducing them. So they give it to some people, and people who might not be of voting age, and then they go and vote. INEC is warning all politicians to desist from doing that and to prevent such cloning of these permanent voter cards. They will deploy what they call the permanent voter card reader machine, and that will authenticate any person who comes to vote. It will determine whether the card has been cloned and whether the card is genuine. So anybody who engages in any act of illegal rigging or voter irregularity will be found out using the voter card reader machines. So they are warning politicians to desist from using or engaging in acts of sabotaging election by cloning these permanent voter cards.
In looking at another aspect of this election, there's a recent poll out from the UK. A UK polling firm has done this. So can you tell us about this most recent poll?
A UK research firm predicts that President Goodluck Jonathan of the ruling PDP will win this presidential election scheduled for this Saturday, March 28, by 13%. Of course, the opposition rejected as fraudulent and not representative of the actual situation on the ground. So that is the controversy at the moment, because recent polls have shown this particular election to be really competitive. This UK research poll basically is against the grain. It's yet to be seen how this will play out this Saturday, Kim.
I also understand that Buhari's APC party is very confident that they will win.
They are very confident, although they admit that the PDP has gained some strength in one of their strongholds in Kano State, which is part of the north. But then every APC leadership member that I have spoken with, including General Buhari himself, have expressed confidence in winning this election. Although the PDP is also predicting that they will win this presidential election by 67%. Now, the APC is saying that there are six geographical zones in this country, and four are firmly within their grasp. So there is no way the PDP will win this election. So we'll wait and see what comes out this Saturday.
That's VOA's Peter Cloti. He spoke to us from Lagos, Nigeria.
For an analysis of Nigeria's election, VOA's William Eagle spoke with Aloysius Okuli, a professor of political science at the University of Nigeria in Nsukka in Enugu State. Bill asked him about the strengths of the two front runners, incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan and challenger retired Major General Muhammadu Buhari.
Buhari is being seen as a rallying point for change in terms of addressing the major issue of corruption. Over the years, Nigeria had been stumbling from one form of corruption into another, and it does appear that no serious effort and sustained effort have been made to curb this social menace in the society. So the country is getting to a crossroad where an average Nigerian is so disturbed with the trend of leadership over the years, not particularly because of this very administration, but successive leadership in Nigeria had been paying lip service to corruption, and the whole thing is being seen as reflecting in social decay. A situation where the youth appear to be hopeless and hapless in terms of their future jobs and all that. So when a message came from Buhari, people were not taken in by the message per se, but they looked at the antecedent of the man, Buhari, that when he was the head of state, people actually saw that there were leadership that could try as much as possible to look at this very issue, monstrous issue of corruption, and fight it head on. So that was what Buhari represents. And the thing when he now came this time with Buhari championing and the symbol and the campaign slogan centering around the issue of corruption, many Nigerians started saying, ah, maybe this is time for us to go for change.
Professor, on the other hand, those who support President Jonathan say his campaign represents something similar. They call it transformation. They say the PDP has made improvements in agriculture and infrastructure, including 25,000 kilometers of roads, reactivated railway tracks.
Let me give my perception about Jonathan so that I can balance the argument. Now, when it comes to President Jonathan, I have to be honest with you, no matter what you try to hold against Mr. President, there is one thing you cannot wish away. That is somebody that faced what he faced, distractions, all the fight, all the sabotage, and he was able to make some visible mark that everybody is equally today attesting and seeing. And that's the area you started mentioning. We saw the revolution that is going on in the agricultural sector. We are now seeing, even in telecom, we are equally seeing the effort he's making, even with all the sabotage, to now make sure that we have uninterrupted power supply. And we're equally seeing the transformation in the areas of not only our airports, but in trying to go to the micro aspect of, you know, rejuvenating the country by coming with so many things like Shopee, like enhancing the capacity of private, public-private partnership. And the people are now seeing that they can do it on their own with minimal government intervention and support. So he tried to galvanize all these governors to begin to compete among themselves in terms of provision of basic infrastructure. If you enter Nigeria, you are test now that you are seeing relatively, you know, competitive and organized society. So and he's aware of the danger of having a monocultural economy. And that is why he's doing everything in trying to revamp that angle on solid minerals and the issues of this agriculture so that Nigeria will begin to think about other means of surviving apart from this crude oil. It has not been so smooth and easy for him, but you cannot deny the fact that he stood his ground to make things work.
You said that some of his efforts early on had been sabotaged. Who was behind the sabotage? What do you mean by that?
Basically, what he's suffering from now are from people that have been benefiting from that feudalism that appeared to be the hallmark of Nigerian economy. The major crisis and challenge the country is facing is from within the ruling class that appear not to agree among themselves on how to get used to a Nigerian that is moving beyond a feudal era of primitive accumulation. So you see them using some militants, their boys, some criminal elements going to attack public institutions and some of these investments.
That was Alois Haas Okoli, a professor of political science at the University of Nigeria in Nsukka in Enugu State. He spoke with VOA's William Eagle.
Well, a senior Niger army officer says Chad military aircraft had bombed Boko Haram positions in the Nigerian town of Jabalam, killing dozens of rebels. The spokesman says militants had taken refuge in the town on the Niger border after being pursued by Nigerian ground forces. He says the joint military force believes Boko Haram units are massing in the town of Malam Fatori for a showdown with the military units in the region. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. President Obama today sent a message to the Nigerian people ahead of Saturday's presidential election. And the leaders of three African countries have signed a treaty that may end years of dispute over access to the Nile River. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The leaders of three African countries have signed a treaty that may end years of dispute over access to the Nile River. The agreement also appears to resolve disagreement over the operation of a massive hydroelectric dam that harnesses the Nile within Ethiopia's borders. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn, Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir, and Egypt's Abdel Fattah el-Sisi met in Khartoum to sign the agreement. The treaty represents a political solution for a dispute that could have triggered military action. Egypt has opposed the construction of the $4.2 billion Great Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. Officials have said it would greatly reduce flows of Egypt's primary source of water.
On the first anniversary of the worst Ebola outbreak in history, a leading medical group is decrying the missed opportunities for preventing the disease from spinning out of control in West Africa. In a bit of soul-searching, Doctors Without Borders has issued a critical analysis of the global response to the crisis. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report spares no one. Everyone comes in for criticism, including the authors of the study. The report by Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, is based on interviews with staff involved in the organization's Ebola intervention. MSF Medical Director Michaela Serafini tells VOA that in hindsight, it is now clear MSF should have mobilized its resources and response to the epidemic more quickly. She says the group probably held back from acting more decisively because of World Health Organization accusations that its warnings of the severity of the disease were alarmist.
They didn't take us seriously at that point in time, even though we have been working for quite a long time in Ebola, 9 different countries, 20 different outbreaks. We knew that this was different. The geographical location was completely different to the ones that we used to. The number of hotspots was different. The idea of this going beyond borders was different. So we really knew that this was an outbreak that was going to go out of proportions if not tackled correctly.
The epidemic that has been raging in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea has proved to be uniquely catastrophic. The Ebola virus has infected nearly 25,000 people and killed more than 10,000. These deaths include almost 500 health workers, among them 14 MSF staff. 1 year after Ebola was confirmed in Guinea, the report says an atmosphere of fear and the level of misinformation circulating in the West African countries continues to hamper the fight to halt the virus. Dr. Serafini says it is uncertain whether Ebola will remain an endemic disease in the area, but she adds there is a strong possibility that sporadic cases will appear from time to time.
Generally, and what we know is that whenever there is an Ebola outbreak, we generally have a second or third without knowing exactly the period of time between outbreaks. I do believe we are in a better position. I do believe there's plenty of lessons learned. So I do believe that there's quite a lot of knowledge that has been shared. And today we are much more conscious internationally about the disease.
Doctors Without Borders warns significant challenges remain before the outbreak can be declared over.
Hopes of declaring Liberia Ebola-free were dashed on Friday when someone tested positive the first infection in 3 weeks. Liberia has discharged its last Ebola case on March 5th. Since then, it had been counting down the 42 days that a country must wait in order to be declared Ebola-free. The head of Liberia's Ebola case management team expressed added concern because the patient's infection could not be traced to any known chain of transmission. Some health officials speculate the new Ebola patient may have been infected by someone from a neighboring country where new cases of the virus continue to appear. They believe it is also possible the patient may have had sex with a survivor. Research indicates that the virus may survive in the semen of male survivors for up to 3 months. The International Rescue Committee is helping local officials to identify all possible contacts the Ebola patient has had in recent weeks. More than 4,200 people have died of Ebola in Liberia, the highest toll among the three worst-hit countries. In all, more than 10,000 have died of the virus. Almost 25,000 have been infected. In spite of the setback, Liberians have embraced efforts to test two vaccines that might prevent the virus infection. Scientists are traveling around the country to explain the purpose and safety of the trials. Dr. Stephen Kennedy, the Liberian lead investigator for the study, was among the first to volunteer for the vaccine trial. He received his injection in front of the media. Since then, more than 700 Liberians have volunteered for the trials. Kennedy said they only needed 600 volunteers. Sierra Leone and Guinea will also launch vaccine trials. Guinea is starting trials as early as this week, but with a different strategy. In addition to vaccinating about 1,500 healthcare workers, investigators in Guinea will offer injections to whole communities.
Meanwhile, the Ebola virus has become a political issue in Sierra Leone. Political opponents of President Ernest Bai Koroma have threatened to protest last week's sacking of Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana, in addition to a constitutional challenge in the Supreme Court and a boycott of the national legislature. Leaders of the Sierra Leone People's Party have threatened to hold mass demonstrations. The president's spokesman has acknowledged the right of free speech, but warns that mass protests will not be tolerated. He says the banning of large gatherings during the Ebola crisis will be enforced by police. Sam Sumana was ousted from office by Mr. Karoma when the vice president started to organize another political party. He had voluntarily quarantined himself in his home 3 weeks ago because one of his bodyguards died of Ebola. His quarantine period ended on Friday. This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Nigeria decides 2015, the final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. Nigeria decides 2015 on radio with Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, and Nightline Africa. On television with Africa 54 and Straight Talk Africa. On the web at voanews.com. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday, with results as the votes are counted, and on the web to show you where the counting stands and where the votes are coming from. Nigeria decides 2015. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Nigerians will be heading to the polls this Saturday, March 28th, to elect a president. And hopes of declaring Liberia Ebola-free were dashed last Friday when someone tested positive for the first infection in 3 weeks. Coming up, we'll have music from Mali. And in our feature segment, we look into Nigeria's national elections. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehias Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is African News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And Sunny, it's Monday already, so happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday to you, Kim.
And I understand South African cricket fans are looking forward to a big match.
Kim, South Africa will face co-host New Zealand Tuesday in the first semifinal at the Cricket World Cup. The clash at Eden Park in Auckland is a rematch of an ugly 2011 World Cup quarterfinal in Dhaka, Bangladesh. A verbal altercation between players from both teams escalated to an angry shoving match before New Zealand scored a 49-run victory. At a news conference in Auckland, New Zealand captain Brendan McCullum reflected on their tempestuous 2011 World Cup encounter.
South Africa's a very good team. We obviously had a bit of a stoush with them 4 years ago. I think both teams have grown up immensely in that time, and we're different teams and play the game in different spirit. And I would expect us to go out there and focus purely on displaying our skills, trying to be as good as what we can with ball, bat and in the field, and leaving nothing out there in terms of our heart and our soul and trying to be as desperate as we can. Verbals are not how we want to play the game. Other teams do like that sort of thing, but that's, for us, we're not good enough to be have that as our focus. We need to make sure that we're respectful of the game and go about our work.
New Zealand cricket captain Brendan McCullum. Meanwhile, South Africa's captain AB de Villiers also looked back on that 2011 game.
We definitely learned some valuable lessons in that game. I was personally very disappointed with that loss. But having looked back now and reflected, I don't think anything over 230 has ever been chased down here in our ODI. So it's maybe not a bad thing to know there's little things going into semi-finals, the way to go about it, not to panic when you lose a couple of wickets early or vice, whatever happens. There's no need to panic, that you can always find your way back on this field and can keep fighting right till the end, you're never out of it.
South Africa is coming off a 9-wicket victory over Sri Lanka in the Cricket World Cup quarterfinals. During the group stage, the Proteas of South Africa posted 4 wins and had losses to Pakistan and defending champion India. Once again, team captain AB de Villiers.
I don't feel proud of the 2 losses in the group stages. The nice thing is that it's something of the past, and we found ourselves in the semi-final of a World Cup, having played a really good game in the quarters. So there's a lot of confidence behind us. I feel the team is in a really good space at a really good time. So we've got a lot of reason to be confident for tomorrow's game.
The winner of Tuesday's game between South Africa and co-host New Zealand will advance to their first Cricket World Cup final on March 29th in Melbourne, Australia. The Aussies will play India in the other semifinal on Thursday in Sydney. In African youth football, here Here's a sunny side of sports salute to the Flying Eagles of Nigeria, who won their record-extending 7th African Under-20 title Sunday with a 1-0 win over host Senegal in Dakar. Our Daybreak Africa sportsman Marco Uma has that story as well as other sports news.
A 17th-minute goal by midfielder Bernard Bulbwa powered Nigeria to a 1-0 triumph over hosts Senegal at the Africa Under-20 Championships in Dakar on Sunday. Earlier on, Ghana beat Mali 3-1 in the bronze medal playoff. Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana and Mali represent Africa at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand later this year. Turning to basketball, Nigeria beat Mozambique 72-59 to win the men's Four Nations Basketball Challenge in Johannesburg, South Africa on Sunday. Earlier on, South Africa outplayed Kenya 87-64 to claim the bronze medal. Staying in Johannesburg, Nigerian captain and former professional with Seattle Supersonics, Orlando Magic and Atlanta Hawks in the American NBA, Olumide Oyedeji, was crowned the most valuable player in the final. Oyedeji urges the Nigerian government to support Nigeria's Olympic dream team.
Oh, well, I mean, it was all about team effort. It was a great game. It was a great feeling, and it was really, really, really great. So I want to say thank you to my team and everybody.
You met the Mozambicans in the finals of the All-Africa Games. Your comparison of that team and today?
Well, I mean, probably I mean, Mozambique, they're a very tough team. As I said, I'm going to give kudos. I mean, to give her the tough game, to give her that was a good match. I mean, they play hard. I mean, my teammate, we came back, we fought. I mean, we stayed together, we get together. And we pulled the game up. So it was a great game. And
what do you feel should be done to uplift basketball in Africa?
Oh, well, brother, it's all about awareness, more sponsorship, corporate sponsor, more awareness. I think basketball is really growing in Africa. We have a lot of African descendant and origin that plays in the NBA. So it was a great thing. So hopefully we can continue. We can base on this. We can build on this. And then we can move forward and make basketball one of the greatest sports in Africa.
Going forward, you are the defending champions of All-Africa Games and also preparing for the Afro Basketball. What do you think Nigeria's chances are, given that they are the team to beat at All-Africa Games and you want to go to the Olympics?
Well, I definitely want to pick the solo Olympic ticket. I mean, I don't want to go to Olympic qualifier. I want to pick the ticket by winning the Afro Basket. I don't want to win all African games as well. So, I mean, hopefully we can get our team together, we can get our players together, we stay together, practice, we have fun, because the funds have been the most difficult thing in Africa, particularly in Nigeria. So hopefully we can get funds from our poor ministry, from the government, we can put team together and we can start early preparation and make things go well.
That was Olumide Oyedeji, Nigeria men's basketball team captain, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Because this is Africa. Time for Africa.
I'm very excited. Because
this is Africa. This time for Africa.
Joining us now with a package of African football news is the VOA's Nightline Africa sportsman, Segun Dot on the spot at Adeyemi.
Good evening, Africa. Nigeria's Dolphins Football Club is still reeling from its disqualification from the 2015 Africa Confederation Cup. The football club, which is based in Nigeria's oil city of Port Harcourt, was kicked out of the competition on Thursday after it arrived late for its first-round first-leg match against host Club Africain of Tunisia on March 14th. African soccer's governing body, CAF, awarded the match to Club Africain, which has now qualified for the second round of the club football competition. Well, the Rivers government, owners of Dolphins Football Club, has formally reacted to the CAF decision. Commissioner for Sports, Freddy Gwe, says the committee inaugurated on Friday will probe the disqualification.
We, as a ministry, we have decided that we will not let it lie low, neither are we going to just allow the matter pass without some form of action. But before we take any action, it will be necessary for us to know exactly what transpired, exactly why they were not able to keep or to honor their international assignment. And so as a responsible ministry, we decided to set up a committee that will investigate circumstances surrounding their inability or failure to honor the match that led to their being walked over.
That was the Rivers State Commissioner for Sports, Freddy Gwe, speaking on the Dolphins' disqualification from the 2015 CAF Confederation Cup. Many thanks to reporter Tony Tamuno in Port Harcourt for the audio. Staying with African football, Zimbabwe has assured that it will fulfill its African football fixtures, despite a cash crunch that has triggered its disqualification from the 2018 FIFA World Cup. The Zimbabwe Football Association said the country will honor its engagements in the All-Africa Games and the CAF Under-23 Championships. Last week, Zimbabwe was dropped as an entrant to the 2018 World Cup African Zone draw in Russia after failing to pay the money owed to a former coach. Coach Valinho from Brazil led the Zimbabwean national team for most of 2008, and Zimbabwe admits it's been owed $67,000 in salaries and allowances. After missing various deadlines set by FIFA to pay the coach, Zimbabwe was expelled from the World Cup. But the Southern African country said it had not abandoned hope of paying the coach and getting back into the World Cup draw. In more African football news, the Egyptian Premier League will resume on March 30th behind closed doors. The league, as well as other football competitions, had been frozen since February 8th, when 20 Zamalek supporters were killed after the police used tear gas to disperse a crowd of fans who were attempting to enter the stadium ahead of a league match with MP. Most of the Premier League games have been played behind closed doors since February 2012, when over 70 Al Ahly fans were killed after being attacked by Al Masry fans in Port Said Stadium during a league match. Meanwhile, former Sierra Leone head coach John McKinstry has been named the new coach of Rwanda's national football team, known as the Amavubi Stars. Irishman McKinstry replaces Stephen Constantine, who resigned in January. Despite the appointment of a new coach, interim coach Lee Johnson will preside over the March 29 friendly against Zambia in Lusaka. Johnson has already named the 26-man squad for the match. Talking about the appointment of a new coach, Senegal Football Association President Augustin Senghor has unveiled Aliou Cisse as the new coach of the country's national football team. The former international takes over from Alain Jaurès, who did not renew his contract. Cisse has already recalled Demba Ba for the team's friendly against Ghana next Saturday. And Uganda may have replaced Bolivia in the football friendly. According to the football website goal.com, Nigerian football officials said the Super Eagles will now play against the Cranes of Uganda in the southern city of Uyo on Wednesday. The game will be played earlier than scheduled to allow fans to travel ahead of Saturday's presidential elections in Nigeria. Bolivia pulled out of a previously scheduled match against Nigeria, citing civil unrest in the West African nation, perhaps an apparent reference to the Boko Haram insurgency. Thanks so much for listening. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Segun Adeyemi in Lagos.
Thanks, Segun. Finally, here's another Sunny Side of Sports salute to Johannesburg-born Steve Nash, one of basketball's greatest ever point guards, who announced his retirement over the weekend. The 41-year-old Nash is a two-time NBA Most Valuable Player and an eight-time NBA All-Star. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 17:30 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, we'll look into Nigeria's national elections. And next, African energy production has expanded with discoveries of natural gas reserves. But first, some music. Here is Mali Salif Keita with Yambo.
I am not a Nadunu pala kubalika, nadunu pala miyoye, nadunu pala, nadunu pala miyoye, yambo yambo doni fanye ne kandona.
Mali's Salif Keita with Yambo.
Nigeria's national elections take place next weekend. They had been postponed from February 14th until March 28th due to security concerns impacting a close presidential race and the inability of millions of people to cast their ballots. The Election Commission postponed the voting in hopes the six-week delay would allow a new regional military force to subdue militant group Boko Haram ahead of the ballot. Many people who fled the insurgency say they are still not prepared to vote and cannot go home. Chris Stein reports from Yola, Nigeria.
Milamu Moro owns little more than the hoe he uses to till a dry patch of earth. Along with his children, he fled the town of Maidegali earlier last year when Boko Haram attacked it. The insurgents killed his mother-in-law and sister-in-law when they overran the town in northern Adamawa State. Now he is part of a group of displaced people who farm a plot of land that belongs to a local chief on the outskirts of the state capital, Yola. Hundreds of thousands of people like Umoru now live in and around this city, huddling in camps or living in the bush. Nigeria's Election Commission announced it would delay the presidential ballot until March 28th, to give the military more time to chase out Boko Haram and secure the northeast. Umoro says displaced people like him are largely unprepared to vote. He says many fled their homes without their voter cards, although he says people who brought it along will probably vote. Dauda Bello is an imam and member of the local interfaith group, the Adamawa Peace Initiative, who fled the town of Mubi when insurgents overran it last year. He says displaced people have more pressing things to worry about.
Even those who are allowed to are given their voter's card that had not received their cards before may not be voting because their major concern now is food and shelter. You don't have food, you are hungry. How can you go and join the queue and vote?
The Peace Initiative estimates about 270,000 displaced people live in Yola, but Bello says that number is likely much higher. Like most of Nigeria's northern half, Adamawa State is seen as likely to support leading opposition candidate Muhammadu Buhari in the presidential vote. Buhari, who is running against incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan, has expressed skepticism at the military's claim that it can stop Boko Haram's years-long insurgency in just 6 weeks. Mr. Jonathan's spokesman says the delay is necessary to ensure the election is credible and as many people as possible can vote. Moses Zarua says fear will keep many people from moving back to towns retaken by Boko Haram. An administrator at the Adamawa State University in Mubi, he has seen the burned churches and shattered homes that Boko Haram leaves behind after occupying a town.
It's like a sign. It's like a signal. It is you who is being persecuted. So, I don't expect people to just run back to Mubi just like that, except where there is an assurance that their lives and properties will be protected.
Nigeria's Election Commission says it plans to distribute voters' cards to displaced people and set up polling centers near their camps. Whether that will get people out to vote on March 28th remains to be seen. Chris Stein for VOA News, Yola, Nigeria.
African energy production has ballooned with discoveries of natural gas reserves, more than doubling over the past 30 years. The topic was debated recently here in Washington. VOA's Caroline Turner reports.
New discoveries across Africa, including natural gas off the East African coast, deep water oil in Upper West Africa, and new oil reserves in Kenya and Uganda, are changing the continent's energy markets. Many new discoveries are being made by smaller firms which have less capital for investment. Recent pullbacks in energy prices is forcing many explorations to be cut back. Former International Energy Coordinator for the U.S. State Department, David Goldblum, outlined in his book, Energy and Security, the challenges presented by a low oil price cycle where a lot of projects are chasing investment dollars. He says donor governments need to make transparency and accountability a priority and build regulations and infrastructure early to prevent corruption.
On the positive side, a shout out to the IFC's Oil Linkages Program, which helps link SMEs to countries. And I think Anadarko and has a relationship with this Pixera company in Mozambique, which is a good example of how it can bring SMEs into the process. On the negative side, I would have to call out Tanzania and Mozambique. We're both talking now about new terms, adverse than what they had before, wanting 25% of all the gas that's produced to be used for domestic purposes, which is probably more than they need. So they are actually making the terms worse just at the time when they are in a less competitive position.
Producer governments and international financial institutions like the IMF and World Bank are being forced to play a larger role in ensuring that the development of energy reserves spurs economic growth. One subject debated was petroleum revenue management. A lot more attention is now being focused on the distribution of money once revenues are collected and ensuring it benefits the society. Oil and mineral consultant Charles McPherson explained how to prevent corruption of energy exploration funding.
There's enormous potential in all these sub-Saharan African countries, but one of the big issues is this transparency and corruption issue. And a lot of the countries are paying explicit attention to it, aided and abetted by or encouraged by civil society. And transparency language and anti-corruption language is being written into both legislation and into contracts themselves in a very explicit way that it wasn't before.
The U.S. African Development Foundation is unique in that it only funds Africans living and working in Africa. They sponsor Power Africa, which is comprised of 12 U.S. government agencies working with 90 partners to provide grants to entrepreneurs.
We have now funded 28 African SMEs who are providing renewable energy solutions to marginalized and underserved groups in Africa. We are working in 6 countries and look forward to expanding this later in 2015, and we'll be welcoming more of these African small businesses who are actually using biofuels, solar, hydro, and other solutions to reach people beyond the grid.
In Washington, the debate has changed to focus on how donor nations can build in regulations and transparency into their programs to prevent corruption. Carolyn Turner, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The world is changing, and so is diplomacy and development. Global challenges such as climate change, poverty, terrorism, and disease are often too expansive and complex to be met by any one government or group. Addressing such problems requires innovation, ingenuity, and collaboration across diverse sectors. In 2009, the Secretary's Office of Global Partnerships was established at the U.S. State Department to promote the development of public-private partnerships to leverage the best of public and private sector resources to create practical solutions for such challenges. The office, which has leveraged over $829 million in public and private resources since 2009, engages companies, startups, NGOs, foundations, faith-based organizations, universities, research centers, and civil society groups as full partners in the process of problem-solving. In Africa, the 3-year-old Liberalizing Innovation Opportunity Nations Partnership, or Lions at Africa, mobilizes the knowledge, expertise, and resources of leading public and private institutions to encourage and enhance technology and innovation by investing in capacity building for startups, providing access to capital, promoting connectivity with global markets, and raising the credibility of the startup culture. Some 2,000 entrepreneurs have participated in Lions at Africa-supported capacity-building activities. Over 80 startups were launched at Demo Africa, a signature annual event, and raised more than $10 million in capital financing to date. In 2013, 5 Lions innovators won opportunities to present their ideas at the main demo event in the United States High-Tech Center, Silicon Valley. Over 30 Lions won opportunities to compete in South Africa at a global pitch event for leading international investors. And 80 children are participating in pilot Africoder Dojo programs in Nigeria and Tanzania that provide free computer coding sessions and mentoring to young people. Many more coding clubs are planned across the continent. As with our nation's public-private partnership efforts in other parts of the world, Lions at Africa leverages the financial and in-kind resources of both the public and private sectors. It brings together leading IT companies, international development organizations, technology associations, and startup accelerators and incubators across the African continent to develop flagship programs and initiatives that deliver widespread results.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nigeria Decides 2015. The final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.